I'm all about the hustle, I'm all about the grind. Every day I'm trying to get it, take it one step at a time.
Welcome to episode one of Carl Brizzy Live. I'm Carl Brizzy, your host, joined by my producer, Rob Kendall, of WIBC's The Rob Kendall Show, which airs on WIBC Sunday from 1 to 3. Rob, thanks for joining me.
Hey, it's so exciting to be here. You're back.
I'm back, and it's my first podcast. This podcast, ladies and gentlemen, however, is not about me. This podcast is hopefully going to be about critical thinking. Why? Because I'm concerned about the direction of our country. And while I love my friends at WIBC, I just can't wait for the Chicks or Tony Katz to go on vacation before I start talking about important stuff. So we decided to do a podcast. And, why are we doing this? I think that we as a civilization are becoming more and more polarized. We are viewing everything through the lens of our experiences, and of course we're going to, but those lenses, I believe, are becoming cloudier and they're becoming narrower. And my hope with this podcast is not to change everyone's mind. Obviously, everyone's entitled to their opinions, but my goal is to talk through these issues and hopefully engage minds. And I hope that that process will not only benefit you, but it will benefit me, because by talking through these issues, I will understand them better. And so that's what we're looking to do here on this show. Now, here's my trigger warning alert, though, Rob, just in case.
You got to do that. You got to let everybody know.
Have to let everybody know. I'm not saying I won't make strong statements or espouse definitive positions, all right? But if I do say something provocative, it's safe for you to assume that I've spent a lot of time thinking about it, and even more importantly, that I believe it. And I'm hoping that these kinds of discussions will provoke rational thought that's not controlled by biases or by ideologies or by pre-programmed responses. Like what we've been seeing in the response to this FBI memo that progressive mainstream journalists are arguing against releasing, right? Never. You can go back in our history and think, who would be the people that would be championing the release of a memo like this? Well, you know, who was it during Watergate? It was journalists who were leading the march to make sure that the truth got out. And it's literally blowing my mind that these are the same people, fast forward some decades, who are literally making the most bizarre arguments for keeping this document under wraps. There are important facts that no one is talking about. Fact number one, the FBI does not appear to have been honest with the FISA court. That's a problem. And that dishonesty or that manipulation may have caused the FISA court to rubber stamp a FISA warrant. That's a huge problem. Maybe it was the fault of the FISA court. Maybe they were asleep at the switch. But if that's true, that's yet another problem, because that Steele dossier that they used as what's called probable cause in prosecutor speak reads like a National Enquirer article. And why is this so important? The warrants issued by that FISA court are issued against American citizens. So let me ask you, Rob Kendall, under what other circumstance would progressive liberal journalists, I use that term loosely because I believe they totally abdicated the responsibility of their profession, what other situation would be where they would argue concealing evidence like this? Historically, they would be the ones leading the charge.
Yeah, it's fascinating because, and I'm so glad you're doing this podcast now, because you're the perfect guy to answer some of these questions that I have. But to your point, we have never seen a time in American history where, you know, the press always leaned left, but they ultimately were interested in being first, in getting the scoop, because that's how they got paid, that's how they got advertisers, that's how they made money. That seems to all be out the window in 2018.
Yeah, because Trump is president. And what the big problem here, too, is how intellectually dishonest the attempts are to dismiss how important this matter is, right? It's spinning upon spinning upon spinning upon spinning. I have a guilty pleasure. I've talked about it. MSNBC. They've gone completely off the rails. They are spinning this thing and arguing that telling the FISA judge that the information it received from Mr. Steele was politically motivated is the equivalent of telling the vice judge that the dossier was prepared for and paid for, wait for this, the Clinton campaign and the DNC. Now, let me tell you, we have issued thousands, we have defended, fought for thousands of probable cause, search warrants, arrest warrants based on probable cause. I am telling you, people, this is a major material distinction, especially when the same party that controls the administration, the Justice Department attorneys are working for. So let's start with this. Can we all agree that the FBI has a legal and ethical obligation not to deceive the court? That's basic, right? That's first grade stuff. And if the Justice Department has evidence after verifying relevant parts of this dossier that would justify a warrant, then why would they use the dossier? Right? The dossier was actually used as probable cause. Let me break that down. The dossier itself was used as probable cause, and yet some of the arguments before it was revealed was that there was other evidence. Well, actually, now that we see the memo, there is no other evidence, which of course calls into question, was this politically motivated? It's obviously politically motivated. Don't forget the part that part of what they did offer as corroboration for the politically motivated Steele dossier was a Yahoo News article. Now, news articles are sometimes used in probable cause affidavits. But the news article was itself just leaked information from the same Steele dossier. So the thing went in a complete circle. When we come back, this is either investigative incompetence, it's laziness, or it's evidence of an intent to deceive. Carl Brzee Live. We'll be right back.
Now, the price for the license is less than $20,000. Am I right?
That's right.
Now, why would I ever consider paying more than that?
Because I intend to squeeze you. I don't like your kind of people. I don't like to see you come out to this clean country in your oily hair, dressed up in those silk suits, and try to pass yourselves off as decent Americans.
You're a ninja? Get out of here! You're a ninja!
Yes, I am a ninja.
Carl Brzee Live, we're back. First segment, we talked about the material distinctions that were in the probable cause affidavit, the dossier that was provided for, and how that was manipulated by the FBI in order to obtain the FISA warrant. And we also determined that the FBI has a legal and ethical obligation not to deceive the court, not to deceive the public. And there are a lot of questions now after the release of this memo of what went wrong, how it went wrong, how the I's weren't dotted and how the T's weren't crossed, and quite frankly, whether or not that was intentional, which is a problem, whether there's a problem that where a mistake was made, which is also a problem, and how the mainstream media is looking to just gloss over this. Now, you have to remember, this is the most powerful law enforcement agency in our country, and the FISA court is the most powerful court when it comes to obtaining warrants to go and surveil American citizens. This is what the Fourth Amendment is all about, folks. Carl Brzee here with you, my producer, Rob Kendall. Rob Kendall Show, 1 to 3 on Sundays. I know he feels the same way about this as I do.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you real quick, Carl, can you explain to some people who might not know what the FISA court actually is and how maybe it's a little different than what you dealt with when you were a prosecutor?
Yeah, it's a secret. So it's a secret court where federal law enforcement officials go. They still have to present the appropriate probable cause affidavits in order to get these warrants. But these warrants are all about surveilling American citizens. It's a special court set up post 9/11 to basically monitor the activities of Americans who they deem to be suspicious. And the material, though, that has to be presented in this FISA court in the form of this of a probable cause affidavit, it still has to be verified. And I'm going to get to this just in a minute. I think you're going to find this very, very interesting, that there are procedures that were drafted that came up in April of 2001 with regard to FISA rules. And these rules, Rob, were established to ensure accuracy with regard to the facts substantiating and supporting probable cause. And these rules are rules that are specific to the FISA court because of, you know, the seriousness and the implications to the First Amendment. Now, under the Woods procedures, each and every fact presented in an FBI request to electronically spy on a U.S. citizen must be thoroughly vetted for accuracy and presented to the court only if verified. And we know now that those standards were not followed. This is why this is such a big deal. This is why this is episode one of Carl Brizzi Live. Because not only do you have what actually happened, but then you have the what I call the cover-up, right? Because I think it's a cover-up. I think the first line of defense for the agency, for the DOJ, for the FBI, and for the Democrats, and for the media who were trying to spin this as something other than what it is and trying to say that it was going to hurt national security. Well, now we know that's not true. Now we know that's not true. There was nothing in that memo that compromised sources and methods, that compromised national security. So we know that's a lie because those were the people who knew what was in it. Those are the people who knew what was in it, and that was the reason that they used to try and not release it, which is a lie. And here's the problem, like all lies. This creates a problem for the future now because we, the public, are going to be less willing to accept genuine claims that there's a genuine national security rationale for confidentiality in cases like this. Do you see what I'm saying?
Carl, can you help the people understand when you are a prosecutor and you would go to a judge and say, I need a warrant for whatever it might be?
Search warrant. Let's say search warrant.
Okay. What did the judge want to see?
So what you do, what police and prosecutors do is they take all of their facts, their relevant facts, and they put them in a probable cause affidavit, and they submit that probable cause affidavit to the judge, and then the judge makes an independent judicial determination of whether that document on its four corners supports the granting of the warrant.
What are they looking for? I mean, and I realize every judge is different, but are there certain things they're looking for?
Well, they're not looking for proof beyond a reasonable doubt, right? Which is the standard in the adjudication phase, right? So this is just probable cause. Is it more likely than not? And then those affidavits can be challenged later on in the process as well. And if it's deemed that they're inaccurate or that they misled the judge. See, that's what we're talking about in this case. This is, unless we think the FISA court judge was asleep at the switch, this was a misleading document. And in my opinion, it was intentionally misleading. And then the cover-up, right, the reasons that the principals gave for not wanting to release it were also genuinely dishonest because there's nothing in there that would compromise national security. Another argument, which I think is hilarious, actually, used against releasing the memo, is that it will hurt the overall ability of the agencies to conduct surveillance in the future, including that it will hurt the reputation of the FBI with the FISA court. Oh, okay. Well, that's it. Boy, you know, I could just see Marion County judges looking down at me from the bench if I actually made that argument. Judge, Your Honor, hold the presses. If you rule against me in this case, or you somehow point out that something my office did was not on the up and up, you're going to hurt my reputation and my office's ability to do this in the future, so please don't do it. No, the very reason that you bring this up is to fix the problem, correct the problem, uncover the deficiencies, not cover up the deficiencies. Carl Brizzi Live, we'll be right back.
There's a plane waiting for us to take us to Miami in an hour. All right. They'll make a big thing about it. I know it was you, Fredo. You broke my heart. You broke my heart.
We Welcome back to Carl Brizzy Live. Carl Brizzy here, your host, aided by my able producer, Rob Kendall, who also hosts the Rob Kendall Show on Sundays, 1 to 3. Hello, Rob.
Hey, Carl, I did have a question for you. Last segment, we had kind of talked a little bit about what you had to show a judge to get, say, a search warrant, what the probable cause was. What rules does the FISA court play by? And when you would ask for a search warrant, did the public ever get to see that? And do we get to know what they look for in the FISA court?
Yeah, so when I was prosecutor, eventually you get to see. You might not be able to get to see it right away. Sometimes those probable cause affidavits are sealed, but eventually you get to see because they're able to be challenged. The FISA court is uber secret, super secret, and there are actually special rules that went into effect in 2001 to ensure the accuracy of all of the facts in the probable cause affidavit. And it's a pretty rigorous process. And here's the other thing. It's not discretionary. These are not some arcane rules that could just be discarded or not followed. And we know that the rigorous standard was not followed, which means there were factual violations here. This is the real deal. This isn't, some subjective criticism of somebody skipping a step. Even Comey, former FBI director, referred to the material in that Steele dossier as salacious and unverified, the same material that provided the probable cause for the FISA warrant. The director of the FBI called salacious and unverified.
So was the judge just asleep at the switch here? This is what I don't understand as a layperson. Shouldn't the judge have asked, hey, where are you getting this information?
I think that was in the probable cause affidavit. One of the facts that was listed was a Yahoo News story, but the Yahoo News story was a story about the dossier. So they tried to spin it to use the news story as a credible source when it just referred back to the same salacious and unverified facts in the dossier.
So the judge is somewhat to blame in this, right?
You know, you would think so. Here's what's really interesting. These FISA applications require pretty serious approval, not only through the FBI chain of command, but also through the DOJ chain of command. So when you hear people talk about McCabe and Rosenstein and these other guys, these guys' names are on the applications, right? So you're like, huh, well, clearly they're not dumb guys. They know what they're doing. They've done this before. So how did this happen? Unless it was meant to happen, unless they intended for it to happen.
So, and you're throwing out names, and isn't this part of the problem that the average person, you got about 15 seconds on whatever topic it
right.
might be to draw their interest, to keep their interest, to explain it to them. If you can't write it on a napkin, it's not going to work. And you've had to go through all this. I'm informed about it, and sometimes you're even saying stuff, and I'm going, oh, that's a lot of information.
Yeah. I think here's the takeaway from this. There are procedures that were put in place in 2001 or 2003, that aren't arcane rules. They are not rules that could have been overlooked by seasoned FBI officials. They are not rules that could have been overlooked by DOJ officials. These are professionals working under both Obama and Trump administrations. They touched these applications for this wiretap and the renewals, and the procedures aren't discretionary, and the people, here's the takeaway, folks. The people who are in charge of enforcing the rules are not playing by the rules. And that is not my opinion. That is a fact. And it's also a fact that the people who are in charge of enforcing the rules, not only they're not playing by the rules, but they don't want anybody to know and find out that they weren't playing by the rules, which is the reason for these ridiculous arguments that releasing the memo was going to somehow jeopardize sources and methods. It was going to jeopardize national security. Fact of the matter is they're caught. It's embarrassing. It's a problem.
Can I ask you a question about checks and balances?
Yeah, please.
Because you went through a lot of that as the Marion County prosecutor. The court was the check and balance on you, right? I mean, in a sense, you have to go through them to get permission to do stuff.
Yeah, correct.
Who are the check and balance on these guys if they're not playing by the rules? Because it seems like a lot of this FISA court is based on, well, law enforcement always be upright, noble people that'll play by the rules.
Yeah, right. And that's clearly not the case. We should debuse ourselves of that notion. Human beings are human beings, and there's nothing special about any profession that makes somebody more ethical or more competent or more uber human being. Now, in addition to the judge being a check and balance, also the defense attorneys are checks and balances too, right? The prosecutors, they make sure prosecutors follow the rules. They're smart lawyers. In this case, you don't have it. You know, you don't have anything. You've just got a judge being handed a piece of paper that is apparently gone through all of the steps laid out in the Woods procedure. And there's a reason why that those procedures exist, because the FISA judges aren't necessarily going to have access to all of the information that goes into the probable cause affidavit. So it's not like they're independently reviewing other material outside of the four corners of the document.
This may be a stupid question, but when you would go for a search warrant on somebody, did their counsel have the right to know that?
No.
I mean, okay, so they didn't know in advance, and there wasn't somebody there telling the judge, oh, you shouldn't approve it because of whatever.
No, after the fact. After the fact. So if for whatever reason, you know, and this happens too, you know, law enforcement, I mean, I can see a situation where law enforcement could potentially omit or try to steer information to fit whatever narrative they were trying to make it fit. And the prosecutor doesn't know that until after the prosecutor starts digging into the case, right? So that's a possibility, except that this procedure has to get all sorts of, not only go through the FBI chain of command all the way to the top, but also DOJ chain of command. So it's not like a homicide detective is bringing a probable cause to a prosecutor for a search warrant and asking for a search. This thing is serious because of the Fourth Amendment implications and the damage that it could cause, the damage that we've, you know, that we've seen being caused. And it's all done under, you know, this veil of secrecy, which to me is the most troubling thing. Hey, my first podcast. Thank you, Rod Kendall. I look forward to talking to you guys next week. Carl Brizzi Live.
I'm all about the hustle. I'm all about the grind. Every day I'm trying to get it. Take it one step at a time.